The Capital Connection is a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio. David Gustina is the producer of The Capital Connection. Support comes from United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President, UUPinfo.org.
The Capital Connection. Hi, I'm Alan Chartok. Joining us this week is New York State Assembly Minority Leader William Barclay. Leader Barclay represents the 120th Assembly District in Central New York. Leader Barclay, good to have you with us.
Thanks for having me on.
So, Will, tell me, how is it being the head of the Republicans at this stage of the game who are facing redistricting and everything else, and people are deserting on both the Senate side, the Assembly side? You know, it doesn't look good for you guys. Am I wrong?
Well, it's been a real challenge, and it's a big challenge, obviously, in New York State. But, I came in under circumstances I didn't foresee coming in, and it's been kind of crazy since that time, as you can imagine. We started off the year big on bail reform, and that message seemed to be resonating, and then we got into the COVID-19 and the pandemic that we faced. So that's really changed everything going on in New York State. That being said, and maybe I'm an optimist as a Republican, but I think our message is resonating if we can get that message out there. So I feel hopeful as a Republican leader, obviously, because New York State's so blue, trying to get back in the majority, whether it's in the Senate or the Assembly, is a challenge. But we're trying to pick up members. We hope we can, and we think we can. And having more members will make our voice louder and hopefully represent the 6 million, 7 million people that the minority conference represents in New York State. We can do it better with more members. So I feel, it's a challenge. I'm not denying that, but I do think there's some big issues that we can run in that I'm optimistic we are definitely going to increase our numbers in November.
Well, Will Barclay, I guess I want to ask you this. You have a governor who has a 65% approval rating. That's pretty good. What gives you hope that the Republican message is getting out there?
Well, I think there's a lot of issues that the governor needs to be held accountable. And I think the pandemic is one. You know, he's been taking a victory lap, this week, which I think is really uncalled for. New York State's had 32,000 deaths as a result of COVID, far and away the greatest in the country, whether you're taking the aggregate or on the per capita basis. We hear unfortunately, a lot about the increased infections throughout the state. But for whatever reason, New York State's fatality rate with this pandemic is way above where other states are. So I think there's a question of whether his leadership was effective. I'm not saying it's necessarily his fault. I mean, we didn't back in March when this started hitting New York. None of us knew exactly what to expect. But there are policies out there that I think would question whether that helped during this pandemic or hurt. And obviously the number one thing we hear about in that regard is the nursing homes, where we had 6,200 deaths in a nursing home. And was it because of this March 25th order to require nursing homes to accept those who were tested positive for corona, whether that was a leading cause of why we had so many high deaths in nursing homes? So that alone, I think, is an issue that maybe hasn't been aired as much. But I think as we move out of this pandemic, it's right thing for Republicans to air, and bipartisan, frankly. We want to get to the bottom of why we had so many deaths in New York State. And if we do have a flare up again or whatever, we want to make sure that we can prevent such a tragedy from happening again. So, that's just one issue. But I think there are other issues that certainly we could point to. There's a problem with the governor's leadership. I think the other big thing, we've heard a lot of the anti-police rhetoric coming out. We passed, as I mentioned back in January, it was certainly an issue that we're getting traction on with the bail reform, even raise the age. I don't know if you saw that article that was in the Times Union this weekend, but it was really, I thought, a very good article talking about how raise the age has maybe led to some of these shooting increases that we've had in not only New York City, but across New York State.
Will, yeah. I'm sorry for interrupting, but ahead. Do you have any idea why all of that violence? Do you have a basic hypothesis of what's happening?
It seems tough, but obviously something's going on here. It's not just coincidence. I mean, you have in Albany, I think shootings are up almost 400% over last year. In New York City, they're up 65%. Buffalo, up 54%. So clearly something's happening here, and it has to be related, I think, although I don't have any hard facts on this, that it's related to some of the narrative and some of the legislation that one has been pushed and has become law. Like I said, the bail reform, well, I don't know if it's the leading cause of this, but raise the age, clearly the Times Union article pointed the finger to the raise the age legislation. And I think there's also a feeling of, there's a narrative, which I don't necessarily make this a direct connection, but I think it does add into it, of anti-police, defund the police, et cetera, which I think is not helpful in this time of increasing crime.
Well, do you have any sense of the bail reform in terms of being able to point specifically to one getting the other? In other words, the violence being related to the bail reform?
Well, the recent shootings, I think there have, but it's not clear to what extent. So I think law enforcement has relayed some of that it is related to bail reform, but whether that's the majority factor or not. But clearly, I mean, back, as you recall, and it's still happening now, I just don't think we hear about it as much, is the fact that violent criminals are being released back in the state and recommitting crimes. There wasn't a day that went by that you didn't see that reported in the newspaper. So I think clearly there's points of the bail reform that have led to an increase of crime, where the latest rash of shootings and assaults and burglaries, et cetera, is directly related to that. I think it's a wait and see, but I think it's hard not to sort of point the arrow that something's happened here, clearly. And easily said, we heard from prosecutors, we've heard from law enforcement, this is what's going to happen if you pass this type of legislation. So, I mean, I don't know if we should be shocked that this stuff's happening now.
You mentioned age. Can you tell us what that's all about?
To raise the age?
Yes.
Well, that was legislation that was passed last year that essentially set up some 16, 17-year-olds were being prosecuted in, adult criminal court. So this allowed them to be prosecuted, depending on the crime, either on a separate criminal court or in family court. If it was a more violent crime, they would have been done in the criminal court. A lesser crime would be done in family court. But it also didn't let them stay in prison, similar to the bail reform. It required them to come back into court by least restrictive means. And so to guarantee that they get back to court, and similar to bail reform for that matter. And according to the Times Union article, I don't want to wholly depend on that, but a lot of them are manipulating that system so they're not incarcerated, but they're put right back on the street. They know that. And that article pointed to a number of, fortunately, young people that made criminal acts that didn't get incarcerated, went back in the street and recommitted criminal acts, and it led to violent deaths for some victims.
Now, Leader Barclay, what do you make of the Black Lives Matter movement outside the Republican president's hotel? This seems to be resonating with a lot of people. You had the death of Mr. Floyd. What do you make of the whole thing?
Well, clearly, again, this is my assumption, so you can take whatever grain of salt you want. But I do think there was a pent-up frustration as a result of the shutdown, result of the pandemic. And then I think this happened. It was like setting a match to, hay or something. And I think that took off where there is, whether perceived or actual, there's certainly a thought out there that there is, racism in our society. And whether you believe that or not, I think the issue needs to be addressed. And, so I don't discount those who are feeling that they are somehow being oppressed or, treated unfairly or there's a bias in the system. I don't always agree with exactly what they think the causes are or they're actually, that stuff happening. But I think it does need to be addressed. And so for that matter, I don't mind people protesting and try to bring that to light. I do also think, frankly, some of this protesting has been taken advantage by people that have alternative. They're not necessarily trying to improve the lives of minorities, but I think they're also trying to push a political agenda. And I don't think that political agenda they're pushing is basically, I think, a radical far left agenda. And I don't think that's, necessarily what would be good for New York State or for the country for that matter.
Will Barclay, what are you hearing in Syracuse as you walk among your voters and your friends? Are people happy with the government or are they unhappy?
I think that's a great question. That's one of the challenges we have, I think, being in the Assembly Republican Conference, is what we're hearing from our constituents and what's happening in, you know, different areas of the state. Certainly my district, so I represent an area north of Syracuse. It's mainly Oswego County, but I do have some of Onondaga and Jefferson County. It's a primarily rural area, although we have two small cities in the district. Most of them are upset with the way I think the pandemic was handled. They didn't like the governor having unilateral power. They thought that the closing of the state was unduly harsh for our area, where we had, you know, relatively low infection rates and very low fatality rates. So I think people are upset, and they've been upset for a while, and I think rightfully so. You know, whether it's taxes or the cost of doing business or policies they feel like are put on them by Albany that aren't conducive to economic growth or sustaining economic power. So I think that there's a group out there that are very upset with, and that's what I'm hearing. But then, you know, as I haven't been able to travel the state as much as I thought because of the pandemic, but what I'm hearing from more urban areas or maybe even city like Syracuse is more frustration with, you know, law enforcement or Black Lives Matter. Or speaking of that, though, they do think the pandemic, I think a lot of people on both sides of the aisle, rural and urban, do feel like the shutdown, particularly upstate, unduly affected them needlessly, I guess.
I hate to say this to you, but we have a reapportionment coming up. The Democrats have more people, and so that they'll pretty well control the way those maps are going to look. Do you think you'll be devastated by that?
Well, if history is any thing to look to as a lesson, it will be difficult for us. You used to have, at least in the Senate, the majority was Republican, so they can control, at least for the Senate seats. In the Assembly, we've always been on the short end of the stick with that. And it is worrisome. Now, you know, this year we did pass an independent redistricting commission that is, you know, presumably supposed to be nonpartisan. And we'll see what those maps come out. But those maps have to still be accepted by 2/3 of both houses. And so if the Democrats don't like the maps, they don't need to get 2/3. They just have to vote against it. And then they would go eventually to this lap four process, which is, again, the legislative process for drawing maps. So I am concerned about it. I would always support reform of the redistricting process to try to make it nonpartisan. I think that would ultimately help us. But even though the independent redistricting is a step in the right direction, am I overly optimistic that that's ultimately going to lead to nonpartisan political lines? Not much, no.
Well, look, you have a president of the United States who is immensely unpopular. He's Republican, of course, in New York State. Maybe not as much upstate as downstate, where so many more people are, but how do you get out from under him? I mean, my governor, I live in Massachusetts, Governor Baker has to walk a very fine line. He's what I call a Republicrat, and he's done a good job. But what about you guys? What about the Republicans in the Assembly?
Well, I think we keep running on. By the way, you know, I should mention, you know, last election, even though we picked up in a tie that was not particularly good for Republicans, we ended up picking up 2 seats. So we can win in a blue state. Obviously, we'd like to win more, and we'd like to win in areas that we don't traditionally win in, like New York City, and we have to continue to work on doing that. But I do think there's a message out there that resonates with people. And, you know, I mentioned the problem we've had with the pandemic, but how about getting back to economic issues that we've had in the state? We've lost, over the last decade, over 1 million people in New York State. Our taxes, when you compare them to anyone else in the country, are, you know, too high. Our small businesses aren't thriving. You know, there's multiple issues like that that I don't think necessarily are Republican-Democrat issues. I think it's anyone trying to make a living in New York State, and I think that resonates. And I think, frankly, we've offered solutions of, you know, what we can do about that. So we can win if that message gets out. But it is challenging, and it's one of the reasons I appreciate you having me on your show.
Well, you're always welcome here, and I mean that.
I appreciate that very much.
And I want to make sure, get this Trump thing right. He is an anathema to so many people in New York State. How do you handle that on the hustings? What do your people say to their constituents when people say nasty things about the president?
Well, I usually say it's up to the individual members. They know their district best if they support the president and feel like, you know, that position is a position that allows them to do well with their constituency, I think go for it. If you're in a more difficult, district, I would recommend to the constituents, even if they support, or sorry, the candidate or to the legislature, you know, maybe focus on those issues where New York State's failing and where we have alternative viewpoints and alternative policies that we think we can win on. I no doubt, depending on it, we'll see how it goes, no doubt in this state, I suspect the Democrats will continue to try to defer off their message, you know, defer on their record, excuse me, and try to pin us to, you know, in areas where the president is unpopular, try to pin us to him. But we always have to fight that battle. And it's always a challenge to get the message out and what we are campaigning on and what issues we think are better for New York State than what's currently being provided to us.
Now, you're in the Assembly minority, of course. Now we have a Senate minority for the first time. You've mentioned that already. How are you guys getting along?
You know, I appreciate that question, too, because there has been tension, I think, in the past between just because we are always a minor party. Our role is to be the opposition party and point out where we don't think the majority is are governing properly. So, but since even with John Flanagan, the former leader, and now with Rob Ort, who is a great friend and good guy, I think our relationship is getting stronger, and I think we're working together in one voice, which I did when they're in the majority too, but now I particularly feel strong about, because as I said, the only way to get our message out there is to have a unified voice, and the more voices we have, you know, speaking that message, the stronger we'll be. So I think we have a very good, I think we did before the current minority leader, but I think now with the current minority leader, I think we have a great relationship with that conference.
So do you think, Will, do you think that the Republicans have a shot at winning back the Senate?
Anything's possible. We're only in July. You know, you see how many things changed. You know, as I said, back in February or March, before the pandemic, I felt like we were getting a lot of traction on the bail issue. And I was very optimistic because I was hearing from both Democrats and Republicans how upset they were with it. So I think it's a little premature to make political predictions, but I think anyone would say it's going to be challenging just because the state is very blue. And this year, I think just because of the pandemic, it's kind of sucked the oxygen out of the room. So it's more of a challenge. But, you know, again, I said we picked up two seats last time. And I think, you know, that wasn't predicted to happen. So I'm always optimistic that we can do it, provided we get our message heard.
There's a big debate over where the schools should open. Where are you coming down?
Well, I think that's an issue we're hearing a ton about. And I think generally, I think we got to start working on it now, which I am pleased the governor does seem to have some recognition of that. Maybe 2 weeks ago, I was worried he was going to wait into August to make that decision. But, you know, families are trying to plan now. School districts are trying to plan now about whether they can reopen or not. I think at this time, we should be reopening the schools. I would note that the National Society of Pediatrics, I think, as a group, came out with a plan of how you could safely reopen schools. So I think it can be done. And I do think, you know, you can't have a society that's completely without risk. And there will always be some risk as long as there's not a vaccination for this pandemic. But there's a lot of downside by closing everything down. I think one of the biggest downsides was closing the schools. Well, the remote learning worked for some. As you know, but if you didn't have a parent that had to work, it was a little less successful. If you didn't have the technology to do it, it was obviously less successful. But I do think there's a socialization important part of going to school. And obviously, remote learning and being out of school, you lose that. So I think those are very critical things that have to be taken into effect and probably weigh on the side of having to reopen schools versus, you know, keeping them closed just to make sure that absolutely no one gets, you know, infected with the COVID.
Well, Will Barkley, the legislature has a session this month. Lots of bills proposed. Is there a specific bill you're saying to yourself, uh-oh, I don't want this, it's a stinker?
You know, we do have a lot of bills coming through. In fact, they've been doing committee meetings remotely all this week. But most of them are either, you know, not real estate, not bills with huge statewide implications, or, you know, just local bills dealing with whatever's going on in local districts. We haven't seen this far, the time as of today, any real substantive bills. However, I do think something's coming. We still haven't gotten any bills through the code committee or ways and means, and likely if there's a substantial bill, particularly if it comes to so-called police reform or something else for that matter, it'd have to go through those committees. So I'm a little nervous, but I'm not sure exactly what the legislation potentially can be. As of right now, there hasn't been anything. It doesn't look like it'll be a real controversial session next week, but time will tell. I'll tell you a few things we don't want to see. We don't want to see our conference, wouldn't want to see, again, additional reform that would continue to weaken our law enforcement to fight this increase that we have in crime. We don't want to see a bill that will increase taxes in New York State. We'd love to see a bill that would, well, it would be a resolution, but to start bringing back some of the power that was granted to the governor back in March. We think the legislative branch, even though we don't control it, has a legitimate role to play, and we should have, you know, equal branches of government working in New York to help, you know, solve some of these massive issues we have. So those are a few bills I either wouldn't want to see or would welcome to see, but so far none of those things have been introduced or have been brought up in committee that we could tell that they're coming in next week.
Do you ever pick up the phone and call the governor?
I haven't talked to the governor, no. Our staff certainly has conversations from time to time. That's an interesting question. Maybe I ought to try to do that at some point. I'm not sure you'd take my call, but
I'll bet he will.
Interesting point.
I'm going to ask him when we do our next thing, he and I.
All right. Well, I appreciate it.
Will Barclay calls you up. Are you going to take that call?
I'll wait for his call. There's no rush. Whenever you get back to me, but I'd love to talk to him if possible.
Yeah, yeah. You have a family with a political history, right?
Yeah, yeah. Interestingly, though, my father was in the state Senate from 64 to 84, so he got out in 2002.
I'm so old that I actually remember him. So, yeah.
You know, so, Dr. Chartok, we used to drive through Albany from time to time when we listened to your radio show, Cuomo and Me. Was that the name of the show?
Me and Mario.
Me and Mario. And I did enjoy the show because I've always liked politics, even though, you know, the ideological bent wasn't my cup of tea, but I always asked my father, and he spoke very highly of you, so he knew you too.
Yeah, he was a great guy. I remember that very well.
Thanks. I'll
call him that. So let me ask you about police reform. We don't have that much time left, but a lot of people want police records released so we know whether somebody has had, you know, accusations made against them in the past or discipline. What do you think of that?
Well, I think there was just like bail reform. I wasn't opposed to, you know, some reform. We think ultimately, though, you need to get everybody at the table, law enforcement, advocates on the other side, et cetera, to come up with good policy on here. And so just like bail reform, we thought, you know, that 51A went a little bit too far because it allowed the disclosure on substantiated claims. And we think that could be used by whether it's a defense attorney, et cetera, to try to, you know, paint the police as bad and paint, you know, their client, the criminal, as being a victim of that. And I think that could be dangerous. So it's a little bit of a technicality. I think we were open to some reform on that, but just like a lot of things we do in the legislature, we thought the 51A specifically went too far, although we would have been open maybe in something a little bit less extreme as it went.
What about knees on the throat or chokeholds?
Yeah, I think a lot of that stuff, I think we supported on it. Again, we don't want to completely tie the hands of the police, but some reform, obviously, the situation they had was tragic, and we don't want that to repeat itself. So I think Floyd situation, sorry. So it was a mixed bag. Some of our members, you know, in our conference, I voted for some stuff, I voted against other stuff, and it's for a variety of specific reasons on it, you know, actually what we thought the bill would accomplish and the effect we thought it would have on law enforcement.
Now, I frequently say of a candidate who runs for political office, who he, who she? And so you got Cuomo, he's very popular in New York State, maybe not as popular upstate as he is downstate, but who you got?
Well, that's a good question. We'll have to wait and see.
How about you?
I know, no, I am not running for governor, but I know we'll come up with, you know, I know we have a new chairman, so I know he's actually working on it. But I think
that's what they always. That's what they owe. That, they will. That's what they always say. We're working on. We're working on. Then you turn around and you say, "Who we?" You know, you need somebody. First of all, you need somebody who can raise money, right? I mean, money is important.
Yeah.
And then secondly, it's important that people know who, you know, who you got. I mean, somebody like Mark Molinaro is very good, has been terrific in office, and yet, forget about it, Jack, as we say.
Yeah.
So, you know, when you go home and you're talking to your family and you just lean over and you say, okay, this is who should run. Get it? Who's that?
Well, I think you lay out some points. Someone who's articulate, understands the issues, understands New York and who can raise money. I think, again, it's so early to predict what the political scene is can be there. And I think there's a multitude of people out there, whether it's Molinaro, whether it's, you hear Stefanik, maybe Congressman Reed. There are people out there that I think can make great candidates. And I'm looking forward to whoever it is, because I do, as I said from the start of this interview, there are issues that I think the governor is very vulnerable on. And I think it's just a message. It's a question of getting that message out, and that always takes money to do that. But again, I'm an optimist, and I do think it's possible that any of those people or someone new could possibly run and be successful.
You know, I've been around for a long time, and I've heard that speech you just gave from many leaders. It's too early. It's too late. It's this up and down. You know, it's really important for democracy that we have effective elections. That's for sure. In any case, it is wonderful to have you here with us, Will Barclay. And please remember me to your dad. We're out of time. Our guest has been New York State Assembly Minority Leader William Barclay. Will, thanks so much for joining us. You're always welcome back here. I want to make that clear, and thank you for doing it.
I appreciate it. I'll take you up on that. Anytime you want me on, just let me know.
Well,
and tell the governor. I'll call him.
Okay, I'll tell him. Great.
All right.
We are out of time. Our guest has been New York State Assembly Minority Leader William Barclay. And thanks,
Will. Thanks, Dr. Chartok.